Hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilderson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. This is the time and the place set for the annual rules hearing of the South Dakota Supreme Court. The record may show that proper notice has been given to the public through publication in the State Bar Newsletter. We will proceed on an informal basis, taking the proposals in the order in which they were published in the notice. For those of you in attendance, the court has reviewed the proposals, and it's unnecessary for you to walk us through them. So at this time, are there any proponents for proposal number one? Mr. Conant? And I should have said, just feel free to come up to the podium. And
yes, sir. Our proponent would be South Dakota Tylers Association for number one, which is the amendment of SDCL 15-6-4D. And I don't have anything further to add unless the court has any questions about the proposed amendments.
Okay. Now, is this the one we got the comment on from Patricia Myers?
No, that was 15-6-30.
Okay. So, yeah, I would say that we have received just only two comments on all the proposals. So, all right. Are there any questions for Mr. Conant from the court on proposal number one from the trial lawyers?
Okay. Do you have any comment on, we're not to it yet, but do you have any comment on in relation to 30B2?
Yes, I do, Justice Sabres. I do have a comment, and I don't know if you want to jump ahead to that right now. I can if you can address
why don't you,
that.
While you're up here, why don't you go ahead and
certainly,
answer.
Certainly, Justice Sabres. Pat Myers, on behalf of the firm Costello Porter, has raised an issue, and my reading of what she has filed is not an objection necessarily to the substance of the proposed amendment, but a concern about the certification. I attempted to contact Ms. Myers and left a voicemail for her, and then yesterday morning I faxed her a letter and asked her to get back to me with what I thought, and I believe on behalf of the South Dakota Tri-Lawyers Association, is a fix, because I do think that she raises a valid concern. Her concern has to do with the certification, that if it's done by videotape or other recording medium, there may not be evidence of the certification of an oath and the other items that come with it. And because the South Dakota rules of procedure don't specifically track the federal rules of civil procedure, it's difficult to adopt wholesale. What I've done, and I can hand copies to each of you,
sure,
is a proposed fix.
Then Shirley, you want to hand them off, please.
And I'll wait until you get a copy of that and just address that proposed fix.
This would be added to your proposal?
This would be added to the proposal. We wouldn't have to change any part of the proposal other than this would be basically an amendment that I would propose to the amendment that's proposed. So an additional amendment would just be added to the language. And basically what this does is states that if a deposition is going to be recorded other than stenographically, in other words, by videotape or some other electronic recording medium, that at the beginning of the tape, the statement be given of the officer's name and business address, the date, time, and place of the deposition, name of the deponent, administration of the oath or affirmation of the deponent, and the identification of all persons present. And then if it went beyond one tape and went on to the other tape, they'd repeat items A through C, which tracks the language, substantially tracks the language of the federal rule 30B4. And I think with that my belief is that would address Ms. Myers' concern about there being a certification on the record if you're not going to have a stenographic record.
I guess the only thing I'd add is if you are faxed back from her and it counters that, would you forward that to the clerk?
Certainly. I will do that immediately if I receive anything from her, or even if I receive a telephone call from her. I'll try and relay the substance, or maybe her and I can address that and forward the substance of that conversation in some sort of joint submittal to the court.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, this is then the proposal of the trial lawyers, correct?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Conant.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that was proposal number four we just talked about, right? So, The second proposal then would be the amendment of 15.6.4E relating to personal service. Are there any pro, or excuse me, I guess we never asked on number one if there are any opponents or further proponents. Okay, there being none, we'll go to number two. That is the proposed amendment of 15.6.4E. Any proponents?
That would be the South Dakota Fire Department Association for number two, which is, oh, I'm sorry. I think we, maybe I have myself, I got to get the numbers right here. Yes, number two, which is part of the substitute personal services summons, that was also by the South Dakota Trialers Association, would be number two as well.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Conant on number two?
Now, do these track the federal rules?
Not directly, just because there are some subtle differences. Essentially, it was made, the primary impetus for the proposed changes to one and two on the calendar this morning were designed because there wasn't anything specifically for LLCs. You have members and managers of LLCs, and that wasn't directly addressed. And that was a primary impetus for proposals one and two, to basically bring them current with the status of South Dakota law, since the entities of LLCs and LLPs have been formed.
Any further questions for Mr. Conant on proposal two? Okay. Any further comments, either proponents or opponents on number two? Okay, there being none, we'll go to number three, which is a proposed amendment of 15.6.5G relating to documents not being filed, specifically depositions. Any proponents? Ms. Sudbeck.
Good morning, Your Honors. And I'm going to ask if it's all right with the court. I think it's easier to explain proposed rules 5 before 3.
Sure.
Okay. Proposed rule 5 is proposing amendments to our current court records rule. And when the court adopted this last February, I promised we'd be back with some changes, and we are, as we work through this rule and find how it works for the court system. Just to give you some background on this, Congress has been looking at several different pieces of legislation for the past 3 years to protect Social Security number information in government records. And the reason that they're doing this is identity theft, which is one of the fastest growing computer related crimes. In South Dakota last year, there were 150 identity theft crimes. We've got three bills before the legislature now dealing with identity theft. And Attorney General Long has testified in the Senate Judiciary Committee that this is a growing crime in South Dakota and will get worse before it gets better. One of the reasons it's going to get worse in South Dakota is that other states are protecting their records, their open records, and so identity thieves are going to come to states with open records for that information. Congress has not yet passed federal law, but some of the bills they've had under consideration in the last couple of years would require all state courts to redact Social Security numbers from their court records beginning 2 years after enactment. So even though there's no federal legislation passed yet, state courts know it's just a matter of when rather than if, and they're becoming very proactive in protecting this information. Mike Binger, who was our former state court administrator and last year's COSCA president, testified before Congress last year that what a huge task this would be for state courts, and pledging COSCA's assistance. Some state courts are responding to this by requiring parties to redact Social Security information down to the last four digits of their Social Security number, and financial account information down to the last four digits of their financial account number, and dates of birth down to the year. And this method has also been adopted by the federal court system to protect its court records. Other states are using a confidential filing form, and that's what we're proposing here. Proposed Rule 5, or the amendments in this rule, and the forms that are attached are modeled after those that are currently being considered by the Minnesota Supreme Court. They had a rules hearing in September of last year that they're considering a whole package of going electronic with their records, and part of it includes these proposed forms and proposed rules. Since our state's been collecting confidential information on civil case filing statements in the last year, we thought that it would be a good idea to collect this information on a confidential form rather than having parties redact the information. not only because we use the entire Social Security number information to match records in our computer system, but also because we feel the practitioners are already comfortable with a confidential form. They're used to using it. We've been working with Department of Social Services, Office of Child Support Enforcement on this, giving them drafts of, you know, this proposed rule, because we know that they have an awful lot of forms that are filed with the court system that have Social Security numbers on them. And so they've been working hard at going through their files and pulling out the ones that have Social Security numbers, trying to remove that where it's not absolutely necessary, and looking at the other ones that absolutely need it. So we are working closely with them, and I can say that they are in support of this bill, or this proposed rule. And one of the things that will come out of this, and I know that Dave Brown wanted me to mention it, this combined UJS-DSS Form 089, it's a child support order form. It's filed every time there's a request for child support, whether it's a modification or a new request. And it has Social Security numbers, dates of birth of kids, Social Security numbers of the parents. We're proposing under this rule to this, we would, if the rule passes, make this entire form confidential. And they're very comfortable with that and appreciate that, because then they don't have to take all this information and put it on yet another form. There's no media here to testify, but I can tell you from looking at the public testimony in other states that have considered these rules that the media has come forward and across the board has said they have no interest in Social Security number information or financial account numbers, that there's just no public news value in that, and they understand that it is could be harmful if it's disclosed. I do have an amendment to proposed Rule 5, and submitted that to the clerk if she would hand that out, please.
Yeah. Just a question. These forms don't actually become part of the rule, do they?
Well, we would suggest that they would, because then the parties, when they're filing their confidential, their forms, their any document that has a requirement that a Social Security number be on the form, we would ask that the form be filed, or the document be filed without that information, and the Social Security number information be put on this form and this form filed with the court.
Right.
So we are asking that those two forms be filed or be part of the rule.
Okay.
The amendment was something that Judge Severson and I have both been working on, this, these proposed rules, and we realized that there are going to be parties with cases filed to the effective date of this rule that probably will want to come forward and have their information protected, and we wanted to have an kind of an easy way for them to be able to protect that information by making a motion to the court and submitting their information on these confidential forms. With your indulgence, we also have an amendment to that amendment. And this is...
Before you get to that,
okay.
We've just been supplied with an amendment to SDCL 15-15A9.
Yes.
And when you take a look at that on page 13, it's got a subsection A and a subsection B, and now this one is labeled as subsection 3.
You should have. I submitted corrective changes.
Oh, to change A and B to...
On February 9th, there's a memo with some
right.
corrective changes. Because okay. when I took, you know, these are Minnesota's proposed rules, and so they were A and B in Minnesota, so I missed
that. So they're now 1, 2, and the amendment's 3.
The amendment's
All
3.
Right.
The amendment to the amendment, if you will consider this. We were thinking of cases where the court sees on its own that there might be people coming in here and doing some information mining of the court records, that rather than just leave it to the parties to come in and protect this information, that the court could on its own also protect it. So with the amendment that you have before you to subsection 3, on the first line after the word rule, which comes towards the end of that sentence, if we would add, or the court on its own, comma, or the court on its own, comma, and then it would read, may by motion protect the privacy. And maybe we need to admit the word there in line 2 to make it grammatical. Protect the privacy of confidential information as defined in 15-15A-8. Just trying to protect the privacy interests of the people of South Dakota, and especially as we see the records closing in other states, we don't want to have these people come to South Dakota for their criminal activity. That's proposed Rule 5, and I can go on to 3and 9 now, or?
Okay, let's see. Yeah, we were originally on 3, so why don't you back up to that?
Okay. And I probably am going to ask for Judge Severson to come forward on 3. Rule 3, just to explain, proposes to keep confidential the financial account information that would be submitted in cases even after it's been admitted as an exhibit in a judicial proceeding. And access to this information would still be available through the procedure described in proposed 15-15A-10.
Okay. All right. Judge Severson, did you wish to be heard on 3 also?
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, thank you for hearing me. I'm just going to speak very briefly to these in support of the rules to protect information, the Social Security numbers, and financial data. I worked briefly with Ms. Sudbeck, who did most of the hard labor on this. As I met or spoke before you 18 months ago, in that case, representing the Clerk's Development Committee, which I chair statement that we have people submit to for filing documents, the case filing statement, which has the Social Security number. There was some concern from lawyers and the state bar on the use and that number in the public, and that prompted really working on these rules that are being proposed. As part of that, we looked at what is often in court files, which includes exhibits, as an example, in a domestic case or in a referee case, could include tax returns, could include checking accounts. All the data includes credit card, includes investment accounts, birth dates, and may well even have availability of figuring out your mother's maiden name. And with all of this information, it concerns us that there isn't a method of really protecting that. And that's the impetus for these rules. And the reason for rule number 3 is that often in cases, those items come in as exhibits. And so the reason is to have those items capable of being protected, even if they're introduced as a court exhibit. And then in Rule 10, there's a procedure by which if someone has an interest in those documents, that the privacy interest of an individual and the public interest in having public documents can be balanced by a court. So that's the reason for Rule 3.
Okay. But just to clarify, this proposal does not redact anything that's in the records like Congress is talking about. This
Correct.
Is prospective only.
It is, except to the extent, and I apologize for the amendments this morning. When we met last night, we're talking about various scenarios. We talked about what happens in records that are already in existence, and if there is something in an old file. The amendments this morning would really give the court the authority with a motion by someone to go in and remove documents, or if the court in a specific case. We're not talking about wholesale going in and redacting all of the numbers out of all of the files. I wouldn't dare go back and face our clerk if I would propose that today.
Okay. Any questions for Presiding Judge Severson? Thank you, Judge.
Thank
Unless you.
You
have anything else. All right. Let's see. I think 4 we have already done. Just make sure there's any other comments on 4. Okay. Number 5, any further comments on 5? Number 6, proposed amendment 1526A14 relating to appellate procedure. Any comments on that? Hearing no comments. Number 7, proposed amendment to 1526A15, again relating to appellate procedure. Any comments on that? Okay. Number 8, The proposed amendment of 153976.1 relating to the notice of payment of judgments. Any comment on that? Very well. Number nine, the proposed repeal of 16227.2 relating to the final decree of divorce to contain social security numbers. Any comments? Ms. Sudbeck.
Thank you. Rule 9 is connected to Rule 5 and 3, Your Honors, and it proposes to repeal 16-2-27-2, which was enacted by Supreme Court Rule in 1986. And this statute requires Social Security numbers to appear on divorce decrees. And since times have changed since 1986 and the Social Security number is being protected even in, by Congress contemplating protecting it, I could only find one statute in the federal code, because I sure don't want to mess up the social services and child support enforcement, and I've checked with Dave Brown and his people on this. I can find one statute that requires social security numbers to be filed in matters involving divorce decrees, support orders, or paternity determinations or acknowledgments, but it requires it to be placed in the records relating to the matter. Other parts of that statute that require social security number on certain documents require it to be actually on the application itself, but this is just in the records. We already collect this information on the civil case filing statements, and on those statements, the driver's license, employer ID, social security number, you could submit any one of those three. But in these particular cases, we're going to change that form if this rule should pass to make it mandatory that if your case involves divorce decree, support order, or paternity determination or acknowledgement, that you are required to submit your social security number, and you can't put down a driver's license or a taxpayer or an employer ID instead. So I think that covers the federal law, and I think this is going to help protect this information. And we know just from what I'm hearing from the clerks that attorneys are already submitting divorce decrees with the last four digits on it, or the number on the back, or blank with number, and the clerks are having to hand them back because this statute exists. So we'd like to clean that up. The rule also for any statute that wasn't enacted by the Supreme Court that requires the Social Security number to be submitted on a court document, the Rule 5 would cover that, because now they will be required to submit the confidential information form.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sudbeck. Any further comments on Proposal Number 9? Then Proposal Number 10 is a new rule designated as 26-8A-33 related to ICWA proceedings. We've received two comments, letters from Judge Janine Curran, Circuit Court Judge, who's a co-chair of the ICWA Commission in support of this proposal, and also a letter from B.J. Jones, Tribal Judge, also a co-chair of the ICWA Commission in support. Any further comments? Mr. Emery.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court, my name is Stephen Emery. I represent the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. This past year, I've had the honor of being a representative of the tribe sitting on the State Indian Child Welfare Commission. And this proposed rule arises out of some of our discussions and, in fact, would make uniform the practice, for example, currently in the Seventh Circuit, which already allows for non-attorneys to appear representing tribes in Indian child welfare matters. And frankly, with the cuts that we're going to see across the board at the federal level, particularly for funding for Indian child welfare programs, this is going to be a very necessary adjunct in state court, I believe. And I believe also that because it requires official documentation from the tribe, that it makes clear the tribe's interest in their children, whether or not they can afford for that particular hearing to have an attorney there. And I think that's a critical thing to let the courts know, is the interest that we have in all of our children. And I would stand ready for any questions in the event that the justice would have them.
Just a matter of procedure, would then the person from the tribe just show up for that individual hearing with the documentation? Is that the way you see it would happen, or?
Well, unless, of course, that person were assigned the case from the outset, which would be ideal.
Okay.
But in the event, for example, that the tribal attorney or attorneys were called away on other matters or unable to attend, this would certainly, I believe, allow for the representative to appear on it.
I was just wondering if there'd be a standing certification where Rosebud would send a, you know, a letter to the presiding judge of the Seventh Circuit saying we are designating this person as our tribal representative, or in an individual case, that representative would simply show up with a letter.
I would hope that we could allow both.
Okay. Yeah, that both make sense to me. I was just wondering which would be the easiest to do. And it doesn't really affect the validity of the rule either way. It's just more of an implementation thing.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Emery? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Emery.
Thank you.
Any further comments on proposal number 10? Okay, there being none, the court will be in recess until it's 10 o'clock oral argument. We will be considering these proposals, comments, and amendments in the near future. Court is in recess. Thank you.